also the work that we're talking about here regarding the climate impact, you know, it shows that in this situation, the human suffering, the environmental destruction, immediate environmental destruction, and the long-term climate impacts are all interrelated. You know, the carbon emissions may seem very small compared to the global emissions, but they will have a direct impact and an indirect impact on Palestine, on Israel, and all of us globally. And I think that the climate sort of the carbon analysis of war is something that really hasn't been thought about. It's sort of an evolving science and evolving area. But I think, as well as the immediate environmental destruction, regarding you know, what Hadil's talked about, the sort of targeting of water and food supplies, has to be thought as you know, I think the impact on the global climate is something that we should be thinking about alongside that.
We have to leave it there. Nina Lakhani with The Guardian and Hadil Ismaeis, head of the Climate Change Office at the Palestinian Environmental Quality Authority. A happy belated birthday to Claudia Bada.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
What is climate change? How is it affecting our lives? And what can we do about it? We'll connect the dots, from energy to extreme weather, public health, and more. I'm Dr. Anthony Leiserwitz. Join me for Climate Connections during the evening news, weekdays at 5 p.m. here on 90.7 KBOO Portland.
Hey, KBOO listeners. KBOO cut through the clouds during our end-of-year campaign, thanks to support from listeners like you. When we meet our campaign goals, we can continue to bring you colorful, radiant rays of radio. Thank you, and keep tuning in for unique music, cutting-edge news, and transformative public affairs on the airwaves.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a winter storm warning begins for Western Oregon on Friday afternoon. An audit finds former Multnomah County Commissioner Sheila Jayapal pressed the Joint Office of Homeless Services to contract with a Seattle nonprofit. And in national news, the Red Cross faces a 20-year blood shortage. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, January 11th, 2024. I'm Eric Leuschner. Oregon and Southwest Washington are bracing for winter weather to intensify on Friday and into the weekend. A winter storm watch takes effect for Western Oregon starting Friday afternoon. Cold, Arctic air arrives in the afternoon, dropping temperatures below freezing. It's uncertain how much snow in Portland and the Valley might get from Friday afternoon into the weekend. Forecasts range from 1 to 8 inches. Travel could be very difficult, and drivers should be aware that conditions could impact the evening commute. A mix of freezing rain, sleet, and snow is expected over Friday night into Saturday morning. Dry but cold weather will be coming in on Sunday. As for the gorge, strong east winds and bitterly cold temperatures plus wind mean a recipe for blizzard conditions. Wind chill in the gorge will be below zero. On Mount Hood, the wind chill is forecast to drop to 25 below. For the Mid and South Willamette Valley, forecasters warn of a major ice storm that could mean widespread power outages and treacherous roads. Experts advise preparing for a range of conditions now before the harshest weather arrives. Multnomah County will not be opening warming shelters this evening, but they may on Friday. Those in need of a warm space are advised to call 211 for more information. Trump critic Chris Christie drops out of the Republican primary. 13 conservatives block a procedural vote on Speaker Johnson's spending deal with Democrats. And the New York State Legislature could boost voting access and deal with a rise in hate crimes. With more on the story, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I want to promise you this. I am going to make sure that in no way do I enable Donald Trump to ever be president of the United States again. And that's more important than my own personal ambition.
Chris Christie announcing he's suspending his presidential campaign at a New Hampshire town hall. Christie was running specifically as a critic of the former president, who was once an ally. Republican Congressman Matt Rosendale of Montana and a dozen conservatives tanked a procedural funding vote, rebelling against the deal Speaker Mike Johnson struck with Democrats. Rosendale says the House should block federal spending as leverage for tougher border policies.
We're not going to spend additional funding for the federal government until we can see our border secured.
A Republican border bill has passed the House and stalled in the Senate, but Representative Bob Good of Virginia is pushing for it and is attacking President Joe Biden's budget.
The American people elected us to cut our spending, to restore fiscal stability to this Congress, to save the country, and to secure the border. And we're willing to do whatever it takes.
House Republicans are also moving forward with impeaching Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. His defenders say disagreement with administration border policies aside, Mayorkas has not committed a high crime or misdemeanor. The president's son, Hunter Biden, appeared unannounced at a House Judiciary hearing that turned chaotic. Republicans have been trying to force Hunter Biden to answer questions behind closed doors while he says he'll only testify in public. The committee voted on party lines to hold him in contempt. A new low of 28% of U.S. adults are satisfied with the way democracy is working. That's down from the prior low of 35% just after the January 6th attack on the Capitol. The New York State Senate has moved to expand early and absentee voting and join a multi-state database to help keep voter rolls clean. Andrea Stewart-Cousins is the state Senate Majority Leader.
And now more than ever, you know, environments change all the time, and it is very, very clear that we need to create an atmosphere where voters can vote confidently and easily.
Some Senate Republicans question the impact on election integrity. State Senate Minority Leader Rob Ort calls the proposed changes a political move to boost Democratic votes in an election year.
It's not New Yorkers out there who wake up and go, we're gonna harvest ballots today. But there are organizations whose job it is to win elections, and they will use these rules to win elections. That is the point.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul is backing legislation to expand what offenses could be prosecuted as hate crimes to include first-degree rape, gang assault, and graffiti, among others.
Our neighbors are being targeted on playgrounds and synagogues and mosques and on college campuses. And I will not rest until every Jewish and Muslim child feels safe going to school or entering a house of worship.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Multnomah County bent its own rules to favor a Seattle-based nonprofit for a contract with the Joint Office of Homeless Services. That's according to a report from the county auditor. The report notes that staffers felt pressured by then-County Commissioner Sheila Jayapal to change the application process. The nonprofit at issue is called Housing Connector, and it uses a Zillow database to connect landlords with organizations and tenants. In the initial contract search process, Housing Connector didn't score high enough to move forward. But the auditor reports that Jayapal pressed for another round of questions that changed the scope of the work. In September, county commissioners approved a $700,000 contract with Housing Connector. This was initially reported to the county's Good Governance hotline, but the auditor says it didn't meet the definition of fraud, waste, or abuse of position. Her office said the memo was released in order to provide transparency to the public and the county board. Jayapal resigned from the commission last year while she runs for Congress in Oregon, in the seat currently occupied by Earl Blumenauer, who plans to retire. Jayapal said in a statement, quote, "The auditor's memo confirms what we already knew. There was no wrongdoing here. The Housing Connector program is a proven model for moving people from the streets and one that I believe will make our system far more efficient and effective. I have no regrets about advocating for it." Public health experts say the spread of health misinformation on social media is contributing to a growing distrust in science and a decline in vaccination rates nationwide. As cases of COVID-19 increase in the U.S., They say the dangers of misinformation and why it spreads should not be underestimated. Catherine Carley reports.
Public health experts say the rapid spread of health misinformation online is contributing to a dangerous decline in vaccination rates. Surveys show the percentage of Americans who believe vaccines are unsafe has nearly doubled since 2021, as social media users falsely claim approved vaccines cause autism, cancer, or infertility. Dr. Monica Wang from Boston University's School of Public Health says these falsehoods spread faster than the truth, with damaging results.
This health misinformation spread can erode trust in healthcare systems. It can lead to people delaying when they go to a doctor to seek help.
Wang says social media algorithms are keeping users in so-called information silos, unexposed to credible health sources or even contradictory views. She says without robust regulation of misinformation content, individuals are left to discern what is true. Studies show misinformation regarding the COVID-19 vaccine has cost the U.S. up to $300 million a day in healthcare and economic losses since 2021. It's also contributed to an estimated 300,000 preventable deaths of unvaccinated individuals. With COVID-19 cases increasing, Wang says scientists can also use social media to create health content and regain the public's trust.
We as researchers can do a better job about communicating our science, and that means we start communicating our results in our processes in language that's easy and accessible for everyday people to understand.
Wang says social media users should look for health information from established medical institutions and avoid content making sensational medical claims. And she says, when in doubt, don't share information that lacks scientific credentials. For New Hampshire News Connection, I'm Catherine Carley.
The U.S. is up against an emergency blood shortage again, and the Red Cross is worried that cancellations caused by winter weather and seasonal illnesses may mean delays in certain medical procedures. The organization announced this week that it has already had to limit distributions of Type O products this month. Type O is often in short supply because it's the most common blood type. Type O negative is the universal blood type needed for emergency transfusions and immune therapy for infants. The Red Cross says the number of people who donate blood is at its lowest point in over 20 years. That's in part due to a shift to remote work that makes it harder to host blood drives at offices and other workplaces. Donations rebounded briefly after they publicized a similar shortage last September. The Red Cross also made news last spring when they announced they were finally moving away from restricting donations from gay and bisexual men. That move was celebrated by public health officials and gay rights activists. One unit of blood is usually drawn from a donor at a visit. A single car crash victim can require up to 100 units of blood. South Dakota is opening its state legislative session with increased efforts to improve the relationships between the state and the nine tribes within its borders. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The opening days of the legislative session in South Dakota are highlighting renewed efforts to improve relations between the state and the nine tribes located in its borders. Between gaming compacts and flag ceremonies are efforts to build communication between entities. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger has more.
During the annual State of the Tribes address, Cynthia Allen Waddell, vice president of the Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe, started her speech by acknowledging the work of the State Tribal Relations Committee. The makeup of that committee was recently changed to include more non-native lawmakers. She says the committee made an active effort to visit tribes and learn about their concerns.
We welcome more opportunities to collaborate with the committee and state, so please do not hesitate to reach out.
Over 8 years ago, the Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe abandoned plans to open the nation's first marijuana resort over fears of a federal crackdown. Attorney General Marty Jackley charged two consultants who worked with the tribe. 4 years later, state voters legalized a medical marijuana program, and Native Nations Cannabis in the Flandreau Reservation was one of the first dispensaries to open. Alan Waddell says medical cannabis is a large economic driver for the tribe.
The development of cannabis is an act of sovereignty, but based on necessity. Without the ability to find tribal programs, provide housing for tribal members, And to make sure people have food on the table, the tribe cannot be independent or self-determined government. Cannabis has helped my tribe fund the gap between bare bones federal programs and robust tribal programs, and will continue to provide a solid economic base for the tribe.
Earlier in the day, Republican Governor Kristi Noem and representatives from Standing Rock and Rosebud Sioux tribal governments hosted a ceremony to display their respective flags in the Capitol Rotunda. Both tribes recently entered into new gaming compacts with the state. Standing Rock is increasing the number of machines from 350 to 1,000. That compact will last for a decade. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Pierre.
In Arizona, the 29th annual Indian Nations and Tribes Legislative Day was held at the Capitol in Phoenix on Wednesday. The summit gathered its largest attendance with more than 1,000 tribal leaders, representatives, and community members. They discussed priorities for the new year. The Governor's Office on Tribal Relations hosts the annual event. The Tribal Relations Office supports government-to-government engagement between the 22 tribal nations and the state. Five of the largest tribes in Oklahoma are rejecting a state task force created by the governor. In late December, Governor Kevin Stitt created the 13-member task force to address public safety, which he says is to address the U.S. Supreme Court McGirt decision. This week, the Intertribal Council of the five civilized tribes, Cherokee, Chickasaw, Choctaw, Muscogee, and Seminole Nations, sent a letter to the governor opposing the task force. The tribes say after review, they conclude it would divide rather than unify and would make political points rather than seek genuine solutions. The five tribes have one member on the task force. Oklahoma's other 33 tribes also have one member. The rest is made up of state representatives. The governor's office released a statement saying it's an opportunity to partner with tribes to respond to the issue and hope the five tribes will reconsider. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for your weekly Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. After that, it's KBOO News In-Depth, looking into the Oregon Right to Repair Act to be reintroduced in a short legislative session this year. At 6 o'clock, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather will be rainy off and on, with an overnight low of 37 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be overcast, with snowfall predicted in the afternoon. Accumulation could range from 1 to 8 inches. Today in history, in 1908, the Grand Canyon National Monument was created by presidential decree. It was one of the early successes of the conservation movement. The quote of the day is from American founding father Alexander Hamilton, who was born today in 1755. He said, quote, "The sacred rights of mankind are not to be rummaged for among old parchments or musty records. They are written, as with a sunbeam, with the whole volume of human nature, by the hand of the divinity itself, and can never be erased or obscured by mortal power." Mississippi advocacy groups intend to submit a bill safeguarding Mississippians' right to contraception now that the legislature is back in session. The bill is expected to be introduced in February. Danielle Smith has the details.
Amid ongoing concern about reproductive access in the Magnolia State, Mississippi Democratic lawmakers and advocacy groups are slated to introduce the Right to Contraception Act in February. 90% of women between the age of 18 and 64 have used some form of birth control at some point in their childbearing years. State Representative Zakiya Summers of Jackson says the new Right to Contraception Act is about protecting Mississippians' freedom to determine the kind of future they want for their lives. It would codify Mississippians' right to be able to access contraception.
This legislation helps families determine their economic mobility so that they can make the best financial decisions for them and for their families. They may be asking questions like, can we afford to raise a child right now? Do we have the jobs necessary to be able to take family leave?
Summers points out that contraception goes beyond family planning because it has many health benefits, such as reducing the risk of certain cancers, STDs, HIV and AIDS. She adds it also helps with preventing maternal mortality and migraines. Summer says contraceptives such as birth control pills and IUDs are currently available in the state, but because of the confusion around the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision, there are some gaps in access. She adds there's also some hesitancy among healthcare professionals to prescribe it.
We have not received a clear response from our leadership in terms of what will happen with contraceptives in the state of Mississippi. And so this legislation is really an opportunity to be on the offense, not have a wait and see what's going to happen.
Summers says other states have intended or have already introduced legislation similar to this. She adds that in order to move the law through the committee process and onto the floor for a vote, it is critical that Mississippians work with state legislators who serve on the committee to which the bill is being referred. I'm Danielle Smith, Mississippi News Connection.
A new report finds intimate partner violence is up in New York City despite efforts to reduce it. Experts note that state-level programs can help the city as well as provide resources to underserved communities. Edwin J. Vieira has more on the story.
A new report finds New York City intimate partner violence increased almost 30% between 2022 and 2023. The city's Domestic Violence Fatality Review Committee report says intimate partner homicides skyrocketed by 225% in Brooklyn and 57% in the Bronx. Nathaniel Fields with the Urban Resource Institute says proactively using resources for prevention is a good start. He describes how the Institute's Relationship Abuse Prevention Program does this.
We work in schools with young people to provide trained peer leaders, train them up with our licensed social workers to work with the school system in that particular school to help individuals identify signs of domestic violence and what is a healthy relationship.
New York City has passed numerous bills holding partners accountable and keeping domestic violence victims safe. But Fields notes state-level legislation can help too. A proposed bill would allow for shelters to be reimbursed payment differentials for housing a single person in a larger room. This bill was brought before the legislature in 2023, but it failed in committee. One thing the report notes is that intimate partner violence disproportionately impacts Black and Brown communities. It finds Black people made up half of all domestic violence homicides in the city. Fields describes why this is.
When you think about Black and Brown communities, the historical realities of oppression, those communities being pressed down and marginalized, not often being signaled out as these issues are relevant.
He adds putting more resources into these communities can help reduce these numbers. Another way is to acknowledge the issue. While homicides overall have been down in New York City, Fields thinks the city should note intimate partner violence homicides are up. This can lead to a task force or collective of groups coming together to bring them down. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection.
Only 2% of all the electricians in the U.S. are women. Tanya Hicks runs an electrical contracting company in Mississippi. She says the clean energy transition offers a good chance for women to join the industry. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Installing an electric vehicle charger? Call an electrician. Hooking up solar panels? Call an electrician. Switching to an electric heat pump? You get the idea. To meet its clean energy goals, the U.S. will need more electricians than it has today. By some estimates, about 1 million more in the next 10 years. And one veteran of the trade says there's a largely untapped pool of potential candidates.
Only 2% of all electricians in the United States are women.
That's Tanya Hicks. About 25 years ago, she became the first female journeyman electrician in her local Mississippi chapter of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. When she started, she had no women to mentor her. She encountered sexism on job sites and was a single mom working long hours. But she was determined to succeed. She started her own electrical contracting company called Power Solutions, which she still runs today. She says that as the clean energy transition creates new jobs, there's an opportunity for more female electricians to get started. and she encourages them to connect with and learn from women who have already blazed the trail.
Relationships are everything. And so if it's something you want to do, don't be afraid to ask for help.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Oregon lawmakers are expected to consider funding some administrative costs for a new federal child food assistance program in the upcoming legislative session. The Summer Electronic Benefits Transfer, EBT, program, which would bring 35 million federal tax dollars back to Oregon each summer, covers all food benefits and half of the administrative costs. Eric Galatas has more.
The risks of child hunger increase dramatically when school cafeterias close for the summer, especially for the 1 in 8 families currently facing food insecurity in Oregon. David Wieland with Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon says lawmakers have an opportunity in the upcoming session to ensure that all kids in the state can access nutritious food through a now permanent summer EBT program, which Governor Tina Kotek has called a priority.
Now we just need Oregon's legislators to fund summer EBT because this program will have a huge impact on over 300,000 children in Oregon this summer.
Oregon helped shape the new program in pilot form over the past decade. Families that qualify will get $40 per child per month for food purchased at locations serving SNAP recipients. Some critics of assistance programs, including boosts to SNAP benefits during the public health emergency, have claimed they keep people from reentering the workforce and can lead to government dependency. Most families that qualify for summer EBT have jobs, but earn less than 185% of the federal poverty level, around $39,000 a year for a family of four. Jackie Ward-Kerwald, also with Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon, says the program has long enjoyed bipartisan support.
Every child in Oregon deserves to have an equal chance to thrive. And regardless of what else is happening in their lives, they deserve to have nourishing, accessible food that will set them up for success in the coming school year.
Summer EBT is expected to bring 35 million federal tax dollars back to Oregon each summer and covers all food benefits and half the administrative costs. Wieland points to data showing that every dollar in federal food benefits generates up to $1.80 in economic activity.
So based on the number of children eligible, Oregon could see an economic impact of about $53 to $64 million from summer EBT benefits in the summer of 2024.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Galatas.
A new baby orca was spotted in Puget Sound. It's welcome news for whale watchers and conservation advocates who are committed to restoring the animal's population. KBOO's Ezra has more on the story.
The Center for Whale Research has confirmed a recent days-old orca sighting near President Point in Puget Sound. The baby was spotted on December 26th of 2023, swimming with the J-pod of whales local to the area and accompanied by an adult female known as Suttles. She's assumed to be their mother. Orca populations have been steadily declining since the 1990s thanks to the trifecta threat of lack of prey, pollution, and underwater noise that obstructs their communication. Only 80 were left in 2001 and even fewer at the 2022 census. It's the lowest their numbers have been since the 1970s. The new calf is, quote, good news, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, though it also, quote, comes with the trepidation of how they're going to fare throughout the first few years of their life. For KBOO News, I'm Ezra.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, January 11th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertov, Chris Gao, David Rosenberg, and Ezra. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Farah Siddiqui, Edwin J. Vieira, Danielle Smith, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuchner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for your Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertok.
Listeners, sponsored stations count on you, not Arbitron. So when you push their buttons, you get radio that turns you on.
Hi there, this is Ann Feeney, and you are listening to listener-supported community radio, KBOO FM in Portland.
This is the battleground. Hi, I'm Jeff Rosenberg. Tune in to the Song Circle every Friday afternoon at 1:30 p.m.
Turn their backs on the grisly scenes, traced to the privileged sons. And your death will come soon.
You never know what you'll hear next.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov, and I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the past week or so. Here are some of the news items I'll be covering. Israel's plans for Gaza and the West Bank. Xi Jinping's Maoist revivalism. And the Biden administration reconsiders Ukraine's future.